the road, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost reporting for duty here on a Monday. Excited to be with you for the next hour as we recap two events from this past weekend, including Bellator 262, which took place on Friday, and UFC on ESPN 26, which took place on Saturday. So we'll go over the results, and we also want to discuss some of the latest news in the sport of mixed martial arts. Dan Hooker, for example, he's saying he was bored watching Islam Makhachev defeat Thiago Moises. TJ Dillashaw told Brendan Schaub, man, they went into a deep dive. And they tested a lot of the samples that they had from some of my previous fights because they wanted to be sure, they want to know more about TJ Dillashaw and his dabbling with EPO, which got him a two-year suspension. He's, of course, fighting this Saturday for the first time since that suspension versus Corey Sandhagen. Of course, Conor McGregor still offering up more, I guess, excuses in the wake of that loss at UFC 264. Little over a week ago versus Dustin Poirier. People aren't feeling it. All right, let's talk about all that when we come back. MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, July 19th. All right, guys, so let's go through the results here of the UFC, first of all, which took place on Saturday. Islam Makhachev defeated Thiago Moises. Rear naked choke in the fourth round. That was the main event. These are lightweights. Islam Makhachev, the prize pupil of Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's now kind of turned into a mentor and coach. Misha Tate defeated Marion Renault. Misha Tate returned after almost 5 years of retirement. And Marion Renault is now retired. So both ladies going in different directions. Misha Tate got her in round three. TKO stoppage there. Matheus defeated Jeremy Stevens. Quick work there. Submission, Kimura. I'm not sure what happened to Jeremy Stevens. Thinks he's a submission machine or something. He was going for his own Kimura before he got in some trouble. Rodolfo Vieira defeated Dustin Stolzfus. Submission there. Rear naked choke in round three. Billy Quarantillo defeated Gabriel Benitez. TKO stoppage there. Round three. Shout out to Dan Tommy. Call that 20-1, bitches. Daniel Rodriguez defeated Preston Parsons. Amanda Lemos defeated Montserrat Ruiz. Sergey Morozov defeated Khalid Taha. Malcolm Gordon defeated Francisco Figueredo. Rodrigo Nascimento defeated Alan Badeau. 10 fights overall. We lost a couple due to injuries, COVID, that type of shit. So that's why we only had 10. It was a quick night of work, although it did feel like they stretched it out at times because I tuned in at 4 Pacific ready to watch fights, and then I was informed that the Miles Johns fight had been taken off, and so we waited and waited, and we really didn't get going until like 4:45 p.m., but overall, it's just hard to ever say, boy, that night sucked. One night of fights, watching it with the boys here in Vegas. Your thoughts, guys? Let's start with the main event. Islam Makhachev defeating Thiago Moises.
I think overall, when you think about the card on paper when it was announced, and then fights dropping off, I think considering all that, it was a lot better card than I anticipated. Every fight had kind of like a different angle to it. It was a lot of fun. There were finishes. There were storylines. I actually was talking to somebody, and we were talking about how good the card was. When we got to the main event, I said, I don't know. You know, this one might be a snoozer. But I was kind of entertained by the main event, too. Like, I just felt like the whole card delivered, but the main event, man, Makhachev is just, I don't know where he gets this cardio. It's insane, you know, the way he fights. He's a tough out. People don't want to fight him, so we have to figure out what we're going to do with a guy like that. But Moises had some moments. I think when he goes back and he looks at it, he's going to go, man, if I just capitalized here, if I would have done this, if I would have done that. But I think a lot of people would look like that against Makhachev. So it was a fun night, and I thought the main event was pretty decent. What really helped Makhachev was getting that finish.
You know, I thought he was going to try and kick his head a little bit more. I remember once in the first round, I think he got him in the body, but that was about it. Some overhand rights. Moises pretty much just got to a point where he let Makhachev dictate the pace and the fight. Makhachev looked very comfortable in there and not the least bit concerned with what Thiago Moises was bringing to the table. And I'm thinking, look, if you're not going to beat him standing, you're certainly not going to beat him with him on top of you. Take him down, you know, or try to take him down, which he did, but to no avail. These Dagestani fighters, especially like Khabib and Makhachev, somebody's going to have to figure out some sort of a recipe to get these guys down, you know. And I know they're great, great wrestlers, especially great wrestlers for MMA. But I'll still point back to GSP. GSP had the ability to take down great collegiate All-Americans, collegiate national champions, collegiate two-time national champions. He wanted to get you down. He got you down. Middleweights, it didn't matter. He found a way, and a lot of it had to do with just how explosive is what he was, the timing. There are openings. They're not easy, but I just don't see that if you're not winning the stand-up, and you don't get Makhachev down, you're probably not going to win the fight. Only Adriana Martins has had, you know, success against Makhachev. Makhachev's now won 8 straight, and he calls out Tony Ferguson. And by the way, you had a different feel for the fight because Dan, you said you were a little bit impressed by the fight and entertained, but Dan Hooker said the opposite. He said he was bored and he had it on fast forward. I think that was just a dig back at him because earlier in the week, Makhachev said who when asked about Dan Hooker. So it was a nice little jab back. I really, really like Dan Hooker and his approach to the game. He actually manages himself, last I know. So, you know, he does it all on his own, but I thought that was pretty funny. But going back to, you know, what's next for Makhachev, he called out Tony Ferguson, who's lost 3 straight, if I'm not mistaken. I know there's history there with Khabib, but that does seem bizarre. I don't know that gets you closer to a title shot.
In a way, it does. He's kind of like one of those bizarre fighters where there's just like nobody really wants to fight him. You have a name in Tony Ferguson, and he's a guy that's willing to fight him. And then you have a little bit of a storyline, right? Because how many times did we sit back thinking Khabib and Tony Ferguson were going to fight? Well, they never came around to it. Khabib retired. But this might be the next closest thing, right? In a way, if you're the UFC, you might be able to sell. How about Khabib being there in the corner, staring him down that whole time, that whole week? There's a little bit that you can do here. But you have to figure out what you want to do with Makhachev, right? Because you can't just keep giving him these fights. Maybe what's he going to be like on a 10-fight win streak before he sees the top? Like, eventually, you have to do it. And for me, if you're going to put him in a title fight, a main event fight, that's the next step, you know? I think the UFC is already saying we've accepted that his style is like this. But I think they're starting to put a little bit more effort in front of him. And I would think that maybe a name like Tony Ferguson might help him a little bit. But you're right. Given what Tony Ferguson has done, I wouldn't say that it's a fight he really deserves. But Makhachev has been very clear that nobody wants to fight him. So that might just be your angle. Hey, nobody else wanted it, so we had to do this.
I think if Tony could beat Islam, he would definitely steer the ship in a different direction. And it would be funny to maybe get under Khabib's skin. I don't think enough to draw him out of retirement, but to say, hey, I got one up on your team. So I think Tony Ferguson should be interested in a fight like this. It'll be a lot of it will be contested on the ground where Tony's a little too comfortable, to be honest. But maybe in a scramble, maybe he can get a top position on Makhachev and maybe test Makhachev there. Who knows? I don't know. He called out a few other names as well. But look, going back to our RDA interview, Rafael Dos Anjos last week, he said, I wanted to fight Chandler, but he doesn't want to fight till December. I want to fight sooner, and he implied either September or October. We know now that September 25th is UFC 266. It's International Fight Week, and it's also a pay-per-view headlined by two title shots, title defenses. Alexander Volkanovski defends against Brian Ortega. Valentina Shevchenko defends against Lauren Murphy. And then we got the return of Nick Diaz against Robbie Lawler, part two, 17 years later. That card's pretty set, but you could still stock up a little bit more. And a Makhachev-RDA fight would be nice if Makhachev wanted to turn it around and fight sooner rather than later. That's a guy that's waiting for you in September. What's that, 2 months away? A little bit over 2 months away, about 2 months and a week. If you want to wait till a little bit later than in the year, then perhaps you could mix it up with Michael Chandler. Now, part of me wants to see RDA versus Gaethje because Gaethje hasn't fought since last October. So I'd rather get Gaethje booked now, and the guy that wants to fight soon, it appears, is RDA. Plus, Gaethje and Makhachev are both managed by Dominance MMA, headed by Ali Abdelaziz, and I doubt he would want two of his clients fighting unless they absolutely have to. Now, there's a third, by the way, in Beneil Dariush, who's won six in a row. It gets really, really complicated. But going back to sorting out the top of the division, the top has Charles Oliveira defending against Dustin Poirier. I mean, that's got to be a slam dunk. Don't talk to me about anything else other than those two. And, again, we want to get Gaethje booked as soon as possible, and someone that's willing to fight sooner rather than later that's not part of his stable would be Islam Makhachev or RDA. Sorry, RDA is what I meant to say. Well, if you book RDA versus Gaethje, I love it. Former champion against a former interim champion. You know, I could see if someone comes out of that one looking good, then all of a sudden you possibly have a number one contender. Now, Michael Chandler's going to go, what about me? I actually battled Charles Oliveira and almost finished him. What about me? Well, if he wants to fight in November or December sometime, then I guess he would maybe get an Islam Makhachev. And that's what surprised me about the Tony Ferguson call-out. Now, he could also get Beneil Dariush. You know, people just got to get over, like, not necessarily who. We know who Benny is because Benny's had two runs in the UFC. But just Beneil Dariush doesn't get mentioned much as a title contender. We need to start getting used to that. Mm-hmm. And if you catch him up versus a Michael Chandler, then I think that would be pretty interesting. You know, I mentioned Dan Hooker's name a little while ago. I could see Dan Hooker and Tony Ferguson mixing it up. Two guys that have experienced a few more losses than wins as of late, but are still big names. Would love to see that. There's not even, we can't even say, hey, there's a fight night in New Zealand, or, you know, like Hooker and Felder had, or a fight night in Australia, you know, or this part of the world. They're all in Vegas. So it almost doesn't matter now. You just need a good headliner and a boatload of fights behind it, you know, and then that you basically got yourself a pay-per-view. A fight night. So I don't know. It's fun to kind of dissect through all this and figure out what's what, but again, I think Gaethje versus RDA, Makhachev versus Chandler would be nice. And if Makhachev really wants Ferguson, then I guess that leaves Dariush versus Chandler. I don't know. What do you think?
I think Michael Chandler is the type of guy that the UFC wants to promote. If you look at the history of people they like, he's got a lot of charisma. So I don't think they're going to want to match him up with Makhachev. So I honestly think they're going to try and figure out a way where they can probably do the RDA fight. I wouldn't be shocked if somehow Tony Ferguson got... Huh?
Versus who?
Makhachev and RDA. I would think they'd find a way to make that happen. Because, look, Beneil Dariush, like, when you look at Dominance MMA, it's happened before. Their fighters have fought before. They fought each other. But I think they really try their hardest to avoid that. And I think it's going to be tough to get those two to fight, Beneil Dariush and Makhachev. So I think you just got to play with the remaining parts. And I think what they'll do is probably see if they can get RDA.
You love that one, and that pushes Gaethje to face Chandler, which a lot of people want to see. It's just it would put Gaethje at over 1 year without fighting, which maybe he's comfortable with, maybe he's not, I don't know. But those would be two big names. Although Ali Abdelaziz was asked about that in our interview last week here on MMA Junkie. Check it out on our YouTube page, youtube.com/MMA Junkie video. And he seemed like he didn't want Gaethje to fight Michael Chandler. So I don't know, man. It gets really, really confusing. I'm sure it'll get sorted out soon. It'll all start with a Poirier versus Oliveira matchup at some point. And then maybe we can have at least two other fights on the same card. Why? Because it serves as insurance for the pay-per-view. Damon Martin. I've known Damon Martin for a long time, since the days back at MMA Weekly in the early 2000s. And now he's with MMA Fighting. And he actually put up some thoughts on what he thought should happen. And in one of those scenarios, he had Charles Oliveira versus Dustin Poirier with Beneil Dariush serving as the insurance fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Look, UFC told me that's what we're going to do. Then I like Benny as somebody to be the insurance fighter. But I just don't like insurance fighters because most of the time the insurance fighter doesn't fight. And I just don't know that the insurance fighter really comes in at 100% motivated, as unless it was actually their title shot. Plus, those poor bastards have to train for both guys, not just one. You know, like, I don't know. I'd rather just have them on the card. And what happens in a situation like that? Let's just say you have Oliveira versus Poirier, Gaethje versus Chandler, Makhachev versus RDA, and then you anoint one of them as the guy. You know, basically you make them all weigh in at 155 pounds. Let's just say something happens to, I guess, Poirier. So now Oliveira is looking for to face somebody. UFC would have to figure out, of those four, who slips in, right? And forget about it, because that would turn into a 20-minute discussion to even think about who slips in. But who, you know, one of those four slips in, and so one of those guys is left without a matchup. I would rather have that, where one of those guys deeper down on the card got left without a matchup, than just some guy that shows up and he may fight one or the two, you know, and most of the time doesn't. I don't know. I'd rather have that scenario than insurance fighter. And so, and plus, it puts a big spotlight on the 55ers. Now imagine having, going back to UFC 264, McGregor, Poirier, everything going on there. And then if you would have had two other cats, you know, in the lightweight division, maybe Makhachev and Moises or Gaethje and RDA, I don't know. There'd be some talking back and forth. Just look at McGregor and RDA almost getting into it at the weigh-ins. So there'd be a little red panty night talk there. You know, Gagey's not going to back down. He's going to say, McGregor, you've dodged me as well. Makhachev is going to be, you know, probably pressed. And there's a little rivalry there between the Dagestani fighters and McGregor. And you know Habib would be in the neighborhood. Think about how much fire there would be at that press conference. The spotlight would be tremendous on the lightweight division. So it serves so many different purposes when you can stack it like that, you know, have maybe three pivotal fights in the same division as the title fight is happening.
I would say I would recommend doing the press conference without the fights. Let them figure it out. Pick eight of them guys up and throw them up on a dais and just watch them eat each other up. And build some kind of interest for certain matchups. And at the end of that, just go, all right, here's what we're doing. I think that would be fun, man.
Yeah, because look, it's hard to keep track of these fighters, you know, honestly, week to week. Sometimes they move divisions, you know, like, you know, Jeremy Stephens was back at lightweight, you know, this past week. But he's also fought at featherweight before, you know. So, I don't know. I just like it when there's a spotlight on one of the divisions. Doesn't have to be all 12 fights lightweight. I want that. That's silly. I don't even want all five on the main card. We did it once with the heavyweights years ago. No, just give me like three. And I think one of them, it'd be nice if both of them were on the pay-per-view. But if even one of them was on the pay-per-view, the other one was the headline bout of the ESPN card that serves as the teaser for the pay-per-view, then I'm down with that too. Anyway, so cleaning up a few things. What'd you think of Michael Chandler? We tossed his name. What'd you think of him behind the desk? I thought he did outstanding.
I thought he did a great job. You know, we've been interviewing Michael Chandler for a long time, and he's done basically what he did on that desk. He's done in our studio. You know, he's pretty good at that type of stuff. And he keeps it real. I like that. So I thought he did tremendous. I thought he did a really good job. But the thing is, when you look at a guy like him, and I think it's something that you could kind of see in a guy like Dominic Cruz when he first started, he did fine the first time, but boy, he got even better. Paul Felder did great the first time, but he got even better. Right. All these guys that have dipped their toes in doing this type of stuff. When you look at Michael Chandler, I think he's only going to get better at that.
Yeah. I mean, he was doing a really good job of speaking and engaging the host and Chiesa as well, and then looking back to the camera. In times when he was discussing Makachev, I thought he was very objective and didn't at any point really, that I remember, I didn't watch every second of Michael Chandler, but, you know, interject himself, kind of like how Tony did a couple times when with Kevin Lee, remember back in those days? I thought Chandler pretty much presented, you know, how badass of a fighter Makachev was. And so I thought he did really good. I'd like to see more of him. This is something we used to tell Chandler a long time ago. I really thought that he could do well in the UFC. Plus, I also thought he would do well back in the day as part of the Fox panel. Now it's the ESPN panel. So I'm really, really glad he got that chance. Good on him. All right, I want to stick with the lightweight division, then we'll return to the results of UFC on ESPN 26. Conor McGregor goes. There's so many things to talk about here. For one, he put out a video on Thursday and some pictures talking about the injury, different pictures like in different settings, you know, at the gym, at home, you know, with his leg wrapped up. Of course, if you're a fan of Conor McGregor and you're ride or die, you're looking at it as evidence, you know, that there was a pre-existing injury. If you're anti-Conor McGregor, you're looking at it as an excuse. Goes, how do you look at what transpired with those pictures of him, you know, posting different settings, different cities, but basically, you know, big spotlight on his leg?
I look at it and just kind of think, so? I mean, what does that do? That's not going to change the result. A lot of fighters come in with injuries. Most of them do. But Conor McGregor is all about winning. That's the most important thing to him. And I know that that dude would not have stepped in the cage had he thought he was going to lose because of that injury. He has the money. He can postpone a fight. He's one of the fighters that actually could do that. And he's not going to miss a meal. I think he thought that he could go in and win that fight. And that's the way that those are the conditions that every fighter goes in. All right. So you got to live with the results at the same time. Had it been the other way around, had Dustin Poirier been the guy doing this, showing pictures of pre-existing injuries, you think Conor McGregor would have any of that? No, right? So how can we feel sorry for him?
You know, I think a lot of athletes walk around with stress on their legs, especially after a long stint. I think a lot of fighters walk around with, I'm not sure I even want to call it stress fractures, but basically, you know, bruises, and these camps are rough. But for Conor McGregor to state that he was kicking, training without shin pads, you know, while having this injury, and then starting the fight off with an aggressive leg attack, again, now we go back to January with Fighter IQ. What is happening with that camp? What's happening with him? Remember at the end of the fight, he's like, these calf kicks, like they came out of nowhere, you know, and Poirier served them up. By the way, here's something I've been holding on to. And I keep forgetting to say it. You know, McGregor threw a few kicks at Poirier. If I had to count, probably like between 10 and 15. Mostly to the thigh. It was his left leg to Dustin Poirier's right thigh above the knee. I think Poirier's been pretty clear about that. Not many were going to the calf, if any. And then he kept coming in up the middle with teep kicks, front kicks. In fact, his own coach has identified as Poirier using his elbow to block one of those. That may have actually led to the stress being too much. And when he finally put weight on it, you know, as he stepped back, the ankle and leg gave out. So what I wanted to say was, holy cow, don't tell me I just forgot because I've been holding on to this bad boy forever.
I live with you, so I was actually excited to hear this. It's something I haven't heard.
I'm telling you, decent point. I don't want to say it's a great point because now everybody's going to, the fuck was it? I'm so mad right now. Oh my God! That's Conor McGregor. The leg kicks. Oh, I'm so mad. I've been wanting to say this last Monday when we recapped, and then on Thursday when we had our second show of the week, and then over the weekend I was like, "Oh, that's right. I wanted to bring that up. It's in my notes, and now I can't find it." All right, we'll have to come back to it. It'll probably hit me in just a second. But again, Coach Kavanaugh said we took him to a doctor in LA, a doctor that's only paying attention Conor McGregor, not Dr. Davidson here in the UFC that has to inspect 24 fighters. Because remember, two fights fell off. The Rodriguez fight. Wait, which fight was it?
On that pay-per-view.
John Dos Santos and I forget, but there was another fight. Yeah, no, this weekend. So this past weekend, Dr. Davidson's looking over 22 fighters, all right? The day of the pay-per-view, I think there was maybe even 26 fighters. This specific doctor that Conor McGregor went to saw nothing in the scan, according to John Kavanaugh. So whether Dr. Davidson knew about it or Dana White, I mean, they may have known a version of, oh, yeah, my shin's banged up. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Further to that, the NAC says they found nothing. First, we went to the NAC, MMA Junkie did, when Conor McGregor first started posting the pictures up. And we put in the article that the NAC had no comment, the Nevada Athletic Commission. However, the Nevada Athletic Commission finally did comment on that, and they said that they did not find anything. So, anyway, this whole thing's just kind of been a big mess, all right? I think it sounds more like an excuse, him trying to save face. And what's unfortunate is he really has a loyal fan base, guys. I don't even think he needs to save face. And here's the other thing. I don't think he's trying to save face with his fans. He's trying to save face with other popular people like him. Actors, you know, the A-list crowd. That's who he's embarrassed for in this loss. Because it takes away a little bit of that, you know, these prize fighters, when they win or they lose, it's those other people you rub elbows with. Do you really think some hardcore fan in Ireland, Conor McGregor, really wants to impress them? He's past all that. It's the people that he wants to do future investments with or rub elbows with, and they see that he's a former champ. That's why that question stung him. You've only won once since Barack Obama. Remember, he blew up? You could see he was seething at that question, right? Because it was true, but when phrased that way, it's kind of like, whoa, why are we all, you know, making this guy out to be some superstar when he hasn't won a fight since Obama was, you know, president? And, you know, that's why he was like that. But I think that's why he's putting that out, is for the other people that run in his circles, the Cristiano Ronaldos, the Governor Schwarzeneggers, you know, all the people that he's met at some point that thinks highly of him because of the special run that he had. He doesn't really have to prove anything to anyone anymore, especially MMA fans. What he did was phenomenal. Say what you will about, oh, he had an easy road. Oh, he caught Mendes on 2 weeks. He still knocked out Aldo in 13 seconds. Then he worked Eddie Alvarez. And he beat two very, very respected champions, now former champions, in those weight classes. He had the hiccup with Nate Diaz, but rectified it when no one won, got the last one on him, in on him. But he won those two fights legitimately over two legitimate champions. After that, everything else should be gravy. But no, he thought he could keep it going, and then he was indestructible. And so I think that's what stings him, goes. And I think that's why he puts those videos out. It's for those people, not the hardcore fans.
At times, I think you're right. There are definitely times where he does things like that. But I think at times, honestly, I think he's just trying to convince himself. Like, I think he battles with his inner self. Because by that same token, like, whoever these celebrities are that he probably feels that way about, none of them are going, oh, cool, he's making fun of the guy's wife. We love doing that here in Hollywood, right? Like, at some point, like, you have to be somewhat sane. And Conor goes into this mode where he leaves sanity for a little bit and does things that just doesn't make sense to anyone. There's nobody that's high-fiving him for things like that. I think he gets so built up in trying to prove, not just to everyone else, that he's still the man, that I think sometimes he has to convince himself. And I think he does things like this to convince himself.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Travis Barker and Kourtney Kardashian or the Governator or Robert Downey Jr., all of these people that you've seen that have watched MMA over the years, they've at some point ran into him or ran into his people and told him, there's nothing like a McGregor pay-per-view, a McGregor fight party, and we have a gourmet chef at a mansion overlooking LA, you know, or the Hollywood Hills. He loves that. He loves that he's the center of the attention on one particular night. And when it doesn't go his way, that's just part of saving face, man. I'm telling you. It's just that, like you said, at some point he leaves sanity and enters insanity, and I don't know. I guess you're right. He does say these things that are just narcissistic, egotistical. And no one's telling him, hey, bro, that's silly. Stop that. You know, get off that scooter. Get off that scooter because you're not making too much sense right now.
That's the thing. Okay, if I were to start acting like that, I have to imagine the first person that's going to come down on me is you. You're going to go, Ghost, this is like the second time you've said something that's stupid. What is wrong with you? Why are you saying these things, right? Then after you, it'd probably be my girlfriend, Laura, or my parents, or some of my best friends. They would come down on me and say, stop being a jackass. What is your deal? I think Conor McGregor's circle, they're probably so reliant on him making money, him paying for private jets and hotels, they just stay quiet. So after a while, you live in this, it's not reality anymore. You know, you do stupid things and nobody calls you out on it. And you just keep doing them. So then when you finally face reality, it's weird to you. You don't understand it. Like, what? Somebody's telling me I'm not good? Someone's telling me my suit's not cool? Like, people just can't grasp that. I think he's in that phase right now.
Definitely. I got the quote here from Bob Bennett, all right, because the article that we were talking about where the NAC finally came out with a statement, it said, according to Nevada Athletic Commission Executive Director Bob Bennett, he and others within the state sanctioning body had no knowledge of a Conor McGregor leg injury prior to UFC 264. Quote, if we ever knowingly had information a fighter wasn't fit to fight, we wouldn't let them compete, Bennett said Friday. It would go to a doctor and the doctor would make that decision as the expert. So, again, if McGregor said anything to Dana White or to Dr. Davidson, I think it's something along the lines of not I had stress fractures and I'm concerned and I'm definitely not 100%. I think it's like I was camp. Oh, you know, it was a rough one. Banged up the shin a little bit, but it was in passing. You know what I mean? I don't want to just call anybody a liar. I could see a conversation like that taking place. And them going, you all right? Yeah, look, you know, I'm walking fine. I'll be all right. Don't worry. We got ourselves a great fight on Saturday, you know. But, again, it's what side are you on? Is it evidence or is it an excuse? I just think it's an excuse. And I don't think he has to make them because he's had a wonderful career. But it's his ego and the people he feels like he still has to impress. And I'm telling you, it's the people he runs circles with.
I think a lot of people will look at that situation and say the Nevada State Athletic Commission, of course they're going to say that. We didn't know. But you know what? I honestly believe them. I really do. But I do want to say that at some point there needs to be a different process because we've just heard of too many fighters going in there with broken hands and, you know, just getting through whatever these medical checks are. Too many of these fighters later on, when they sit down with us and talk, well, I had a broken arm going into that fight, or I had this, I had that. At some point, these guys need to look at whatever their testing is and figure something else out because people are just getting around it.
Yeah. I don't know, man. You know, for us, a hobby, he was grossed out by narcissistic Conor McGregor. That thing blew up on MMA Junkie. He says, I don't know how you guys can be a fan of this man. You know, Feroz is pretty respected in mixed martial arts. He is the head coach, George St. Pierre. He had a wonderful run with George St. Pierre, and he's the owner of the TriStar Gym, which has produced other great athletes like Roy McDonald, for example. And he was not feeling McGregor and his antics one bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who has a great reputation in our sport. And I honestly think he told it like it was. You know, I totally understood. There's times where I sit back and go, man, there's a lot of things that Conor McGregor does that I find funny that I actually have respect, like business-wise. And like, you're right. Okay, you can poke your holes, Chad Mendez, all that stuff. But there are things that you have to give him props for. But everything Feroz was saying, I high-five him. I understood that all. Like, there's times where I'll sit back and go, what the hell is going on? I can't believe this is actually happening.
Yeah. Here's a quote from him. He says, if Conor McGregor has one true friend in this world, maybe he's just surrounded by people who just want his prestige and money, and they want to get what they can from him. But if he has a single true friend in this world, that true friend is going to have to take him behind closed doors and say, look, so that's like a sub quote. The way you're behaving, it's stupid. You're making yourself look bad. You're embarrassing us, your family, your friends. It's just a humiliating way for a true martial artist or warrior to behave. He's going after kids now. Now if that was anybody else, if it was a guy on a prelim card, would we all be like, kick this guy off the roster, kick this guy out of the UFC? No. But because it's Conor McGregor, you can't say that. It's Conor McGregor. He's the poster boy. He's the one that sells the tickets. No, there's no pass for that. And, you know, people have been pointing back to all this talk of death. And remember, that cost Frank Mir his job about 15 years ago when he was with the WEC. He was a broadcaster with the WEC, and he was fighting Brock Lesnar probably about 12 years ago. And I think he said something along the lines of, I actually want an actual death to take place in the octagon, something like that. Mm-hmm. And many say that led to him getting, you know, let go of the WEC, because most people I talked to, including myself, I thought he was doing a good job with WEC. I was surprised to hear a few people say, oh, thank God he was awful. I thought I heard that last week, and I was like, really? Shit, I thought he was good. But anyway, difference of opinion. Firas brings up some good points. You know, there's just some things that really went a bit too far, you know. And, you know, Shaq lost finals. I mean, everyone loves Shaq. Kobe lost finals. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves Kobe. Loved Kobe. You know, this happens. I mean, Michael Jordan is one of the few that can go, well, I mean, he almost had a perfect career. Two gold medals, six titles, never even went to the seventh game. You know what I mean? But everybody else, like a Magic Johnson, lost finals. Larry Bird lost finals. Tom Brady lost finals. Montana's another one you can go, didn't lose one. All right, whatever. But McGregor already had three losses going into the UFC. But if you only followed him in the UFC, up until when he lost to Nate Diaz, he had a perfect career going, you know, just in the UFC alone. And even coming out of that, because he avenged it and then had the two titles to show for it, first simultaneous champ, he was doing great, man. And then we even gave him a pass when he lost to Floyd. Well, what do you want? You know, he's never boxed before. You know, and this is arguably one of the greatest tactical boxers ever. What do you want? But then he comes back and loses to Habib, and now he's lost two to Poirier. You know, he had the one against Cowboy Cerrone. I'm telling you, that the star just isn't shining. But I just wish he would understand, you came in here with three losses, you know, or two losses, I believe. Nate may have been the third. Relax. You've already done so much. You're going to be lauded for the rest of your career. You really changed the game. You really did, McGregor. Stop acting like a jackass. Just fight and have fun and make money and be the legend that you are. He's a legend right now, and he will be till the end of time, unless he honestly just has a not just an athlete meltdown, but a human meltdown. Because make no mistake, he does get into trouble outside as well. You know, mm-hmm. You never know, man. So Richard Sherman came out of one of the poorest neighborhoods in Los Angeles, went to Stanford, got a degree, and became an all-pro cornerback for Seattle. He even played with the 49ers. He had a bad week last week. Can happen to anybody, you know, with education, with money, with fame, whatever. He really just needs to dial it down and enjoy life, man.
I don't know what happened to Richard Sherman. What happened to Richard Sherman?
I don't know all the details, but basically he was trying to break into his in-law's house to get with his, I don't know if it's his wife, because I didn't read the details, but it was labeled a domestic dispute. But there's video on TMZ showing him getting aggressive and trying to, I guess, get into the in-law's house. Yeah, it's really, really disappointing, because you want to hear about success stories like that, you know, where people have turned it around. And so I don't know. It's too easy to think, well, you know, is this head trauma? Has he had anger issues? You know, I don't know, because I didn't read all the details. Mm-hmm. But it was scrolling on the Suns game when I was watching the Suns game. By the way, what happened to those guys? Up 2-0, now they're down 3-2. the fuck?
I know. So they play again tomorrow, right? But, hey, let me ask you something about head trauma. In the NFL, I know everybody takes it, right? I mean, the low-hanging fruit's probably going to be kickers, right? They get the least. But what are some of the safer positions? Because I would imagine a corner would be a little safer than maybe some of the other ones, right?
Yeah, if you're like a Deion Sanders-esque who didn't like to hit too much, then I would say a corner, maybe a shutdown corner would be a good one. But your linebackers, your defensive linemen, your offensive linemen, your running backs. You know when I remember all this starting goes, honestly, was quarterbacks getting jacked up. Troy Aikman got a lot of concussions about 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
Steve Young, too.
Steve Young. That's when I started hearing more of it. And they started protecting the quarterbacks a lot more. But then as we got more and more, you know, they started making movies and documentaries, and you started seeing that a lot of people started suffering from this. Mike Webster, Dave Duerson, formerly of the Pittsburgh Steelers and Chicago Bears, respectively. You know, Junior Seau, it probably led to Junior Seau, you know, and him taking his own life. It became more public, and, of course, now we've seen movies where – I guess it's been argued and proven that the NFL even knew more than they had shared. And so it's unfortunate because I guess if the world hadn't opened up more and everybody has the ability to share information through the internet, you know, would some of these things still be as unknown? Pro wrestling went through something like that similar too. I remember you, myself, and Elvis Johnson going to a card in Anaheim where The Rock wants to hit Mankind with 20 chair shots. I kid you not.
I just talked about it yesterday.
At least 15 or 20 of them?
At least I remember being 21, but a friend of mine was saying that it was like around 11 or something like that. But yeah.
And now you don't see chair shots anymore.
Huh?
And now you don't see chair shots anymore.
Right.
And that was late 90s. So MMA now, MMA, I mean, do you think that a lot of these situations that you're seeing with like a BJ Penn, I mean, could it be anger? Could it be TBI? I don't know, you know, but we're finding out more. We're finding out more about the military as well. We've really learned a lot about this in the last 20 to 30 years. But with McGregor, I don't think it's that. I think it's more of a like, what Faraz Zahabi said, narcissistic, ego, just somebody who's so powerful and so rich, they won't listen to anyone until they have the tailspin, you know, out of control. And hopefully they can pick themselves up and build themselves back up like a Mike Tyson did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it sucks, man. It sucks because we saw McGregor from just a fun-loving kid who was fighting a cage warriors trying to become a champ there, dreaming to one day become a UFC champion and, you know, making his dreams come through true. I remember he said something one time. He goes, I want to sign a $100 million contract for my next 10 fights. And I remember going, man, you want $10 million a fight? Get the F out of here. You're crazy. And now he can probably do that in 4 fights. But he just had this vision, you know, and I went back and listened to a few McGregor interviews the other day and that we had. This was prior to him being in the UFC. And I remember him telling a funny story about it was one of his cage warrior fights. It was the fight before the one we were interviewing him. He was actually going to be fighting in Dublin, Ireland. And he said that the one before he fought in London and 20 people went in his entourage to London, you know, to support him. But he said that they actually flew him on the day of weigh-ins. He goes, that was a mess. I was laughing. They actually flew him on the day of weigh-ins. Remember how hard it was for him to make featherweight?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now when you look at people preparing his meals and people wrapping him up in towels and him being in a mansion and, you know, having all the, you know, the PI, you know, at his disposal. How times have changed from flying from Ireland to London on the day of your weigh-ins to make weight.
That's a bad idea for anyone.
He leads now. I almost wish I could just send him those shows and go, hey, listen to this, bro. Listen to this. This is when you were having fun. Right now, I don't know that you're having as much fun. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. Because they say money doesn't change everything. It certainly helps, but it doesn't change everything.
Yeah.
Rich people get their own lives all the time.
Sometimes it takes things like that for you to remember. You know, just like, have you ever had a conversation about 2 months ago? I did a Zoom call with some of my best friends growing up, some of them I keep in contact with a lot, and some of them I don't speak to for like a year or so. We'll just pop on. But just in like having those conversations, all of us together, you just realize how much fun life was at a certain point, you know, in your life. And you get reminded of that, and it gives you this type of energy that stays with you. So yeah, man, I actually think that's a great idea. If you could hear something like that, you have to remember how you got to where you're at. And sometimes you'll realize that you were a certain person to get there, but you're not the same person when you got there, right? So
This is a perfect example. I bet you on that call, at some point, you and some of, if not all of your friends, probably told a white lie about how well you might be doing, even if it was just a smidgen, right? Because there's this pressure that humans put on themselves. Sometimes it's family pressure, friend pressure, peer pressure, whatever. Hey, how are things going? And you might have had a shitty, oh man, yeah, things are going good. Things are upbeat or whatever. Now times that bullshit, and I do it too, by the way, times that by 100 or 1,000 or wherever McGregor's at, and things just need to line up perfectly. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden you get your ass kicked in front of millions on TV and thousands in the arena. Not only that, you have a broken leg and you have to hobble out of there against somebody who embarrassed you about the whole charity thing. His wife flipped you off on the way out. Whoo! And if you have an ego, you know, man, that's got to sting. You know, it's got to sting. Oh. But you kind of put yourself in that position a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's true that you were kicking without shin pads, let's rewind again. If it's true you're kicking without shin pads, that's known as dumb, because I've seen the guys at Extreme Couture, and when they're going to go hard sparring, they have to have the shin pads on. In fact, there's some days where they have to have knee pads on if they're going to be doing wrestling or something else. And a lot of new fighters will be like, oh, no, I don't have any. Well, you better borrow some or you're not practicing. That's one thing. Two, if that in fact was the injury, then you would think you would be taking it a little bit easier. I mean, he was pouring it on leg kicks. Like there was some bonus. Hey, if there's 10 kicks in a round, you get 100 grand from Dana White. I mean, he was kicking them like there was no tomorrow. You know, yeah. So again, low fighter IQ, or maybe he's not being as honest as we think. All right, enough of Conor McGregor. We definitely hope for the best for him. He's now in L.A. recovering. He said 6 weeks on the with the cast and with the crutches. And then he'll rebuild himself. And we certainly hope he does. I just want the old Conor McGregor. The new one, I don't know. Let's finish this out. Misha Tate had a wonderful return, goes from retirement. She defeated Marion Renault and got the finish, which is always better when you can do that. I think it's just even more statement. That's why Makachev was big for him. It was big for Misha Tate. Marion Renault, this was her last fight. She left her gloves in the octagon. So she had that moment to speak to Paul Felder. But back to Misha Tate, what did you think of her performance?
Okay, so I thought she looked great. But some people are using that word and they're saying it great for somebody who came off of a layoff. I think this is just a great performance overall, regardless. Like, she looked different physically. I thought she fought that fight pretty smart. Every situation she was in, she made the best of. So I think you have to give credit to her, and you have to give credit to her coaching staff and just the immediate people around her, because she just looked like somebody completely different. Like, she was just using the Misha Tate name, but that looked like a completely different fighter to me. And it's not to say that the Misha Tate that left when she retired was bad. This is just looks like a rejuvenated Misha Tate. Like, I was so impressed by that performance.
She looked leaner. She looked stronger, and she actually was more explosive with her strikes, and her cardio looked like it was off the charts as well. So I was very, very impressed. Maybe the time off was better for her. She's had two kids since then. she's in a different relationship, and now she has different coaches. If you'll recall, Robert Paulus was her coach when she had her run. So good on her, you know. And right away, I think Holly Holm, she wants to run it. Misha Tate said, hey, they can all get it. And then she said, respectfully, because, you know, Misha, she's a very nice person. But she says she wants to make a title run out of this. This wasn't like, well, let's see how this feels. She's already been programmed from the beginning. I want to make a title run, you know. And so this is a good start. She fought a veteran. She won. She got the finish. Let's see what's next. The nice thing about a home fight is even if she loses, but it's a great fight, they're 1-1, you know, that could just be a fun rivalry, I guess. I don't know. I don't think you want to get to Amanda Nunes just yet. You want to catch her before she retires if you really want to win it from her. And I don't think she has too many fights left. But at the same time, I think I'd like to see probably at least one, maybe two more fights before Nunes and continuous improvement, because you got to be perfect against Nunes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're being smart about the whole situation, you got to see how much time Amanda has here. And she keeps saying that there's not that much time left, right? So she, right. If you're Misha Tate, I think you just take it one fight at a time. And you really, because you have to remember, at some point in your career, in your life, you either didn't have a love for the sport, or it was too much for you, or you felt like you couldn't do it anymore. Those type of things don't completely go away. You know, maybe one or maybe two of those problems get solved. So you have to really, you can't look too far ahead. You have to go fight by fight and just pick what makes the most sense for you at the time. And I think, to me, I think like the rematch with Holly Holm is almost as big for her as it is for Holly. I'm sure Holly really wants it. So I would kind of make that my first goal. And then if I can get past her, then I think you start thinking about other stuff. But I really don't think she should be looking that far ahead. Just have fun. I think that's what's really gotten her where she is right now. She seems more pleasant. Seems like she's having fun doing what she's doing. I would just build off of that momentum, but I wouldn't go too far into all this.
Agreed. Let me see. Mateus Gamrot defeated Jeremy Stevens. This was the featured bout. It ended in the first round. He submitted him via a Kimura. This kid's from Poland, goes, and he's 19-1-1. You know, future definitely looks promising for him. Stevens says he's going to rebuild and come back. But he's lost five in a row. We'll see. You know, he's fought 30-some times in the UFC. I don't know. You think he'll get another fight? Or what's your opinion here?
I don't know, man. I feel like I've gone back and forth on this. I feel like right now, because we have fights, you know, still even with – it looked like we were starting to get out of the woods with COVID, but it still has a presence. I think just having fighters that are always ready to go is kind of an asset. And that's what you have with Jeremy Stevens, right? He's one of those guys that he doesn't strike me as a guy that says, well, I need 3 months to prepare and I need a proper training camp. I think he's a guy that just says, where do I sign? I'm ready to bang. Let's do this, you know? And I think there's some value to that. So just if you look at his placement on the card too, you know, I think the UFC likes him. He's had some hiccups here and there, you know, not just in the cage, but outside the cage. But I honestly could see them giving him one more. So I think he will get one more.
We'll see. Rodolfo Rivera, he defeated Dustin Stolzfus. This was a third round rear naked choke for him. So good on him. Definitely looks like he's shoring up his cardio. Billy Quarantillo defeated Gabriel Benitez. TKO in round three. So we had three third-round stoppages. Those are rare, by the way, third-round stoppages, but we had three of those. The whole main card had stoppages, three subs and two TKOs. So that part made it nice in terms of closing the event. Daniel Rodriguez defeated Preston Parsons. I think I mentioned these already. Amanda Lemos defeated Montserrat Ruiz. Sergey Morozov defeated Khalid Taha. Malcolm Gordon defeated Francisco Figueiredo, and Rodrigo Nascimento defeated Alan Bedeau. We had some finishes there as well. I think we had 8 out of 10 finishes, so that's cool. Maybe that's why the show feels slow at times, because when you get some of these finishes, the other fighters aren't necessarily ready to go, and sometimes there's that fill-in time where you're like, ah, come on already. You know, sometimes that pisses people off too. The bonuses went to Billy Quarantillo versus Gabriel Benitez, Misha Tate, Rodolfo Vieira, Matheus Gamero, and Rodrigo Nascimento got performances other night. So what, 6 bonuses here? Huh. I don't know if I'm looking at the right information. This was at the UFC Apex, so no gate, no crowd figures. What now?
You know what I go back and forth on? Is sometimes when you'll see like a really deep card, you get excited because you're just getting more fights. But there are times where you get one of these cards that has like 10 fights or something, and I actually kind of like it. The commitment that is required out of a fan is just about almost your entire Saturday with the UFC, right? And if you're just a UFC fan, okay. But if you're a Bellator fan too, and you just spent Friday doing the same shit, and if you're a PFL fan, like, that's a lot to ask out of a human being, right? If I'm somebody's wife or whatever, like, I'm going, what the fuck? Like, how much of your time are you sitting watching fights? There's times where these shorter cards, I kind of dig them a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's about 4 to 10 p.m., and you'll get your 10 to 12 fights, depending on the pacing, on Saturday. Showtime will give you about 4 or 5 in 3 hours, starting at 6, ending around 9. PFL, man, PFL sometimes gets going like at 1:50 p.m. over here in the West Coast for their prelims. So it can be definitely time-consuming. All right. Lastly, UFC-related, International Fight Week has been announced as the week of basically fight week for UFC 266. Now, UFC 266 takes place in September, on September 25th. So the 21st through the 25th is International Fight Week. It's the 9th annual edition of it, and it's going to include the 2020 Hall of Fame induction ceremony, of course, weigh-ins, and the event itself. Plus, it sounds like the UFC is going to have additional events centered around International Fight Week. You know, a lot of times they'll have booths and festivities set up on weigh-in day and on fight day, where they'll have a lot of the fighters in town to meet fans. So It's called the UFC Fan Experience. It's a 2-day interactive fan experience. And so they'll really, really come in heavy with that. Meet and greets, autograph sessions, all that stuff. What I don't know, folks, is if it's going to be like it used to be in the old days, where it was in a conference hall, you know, or where they have a lot of these conferences here in town, sometimes at the Las Vegas Exposition Convention Center, or sometimes at the Mandalay Bay, or again, if it just might be within the grounds of the T-Mobile Arena. Hopefully not, man, because it was so hot. It was like 110 to 115 on those days before UFC 264. It was brutal to be outside. But
I want to say the last one. I want to say the last one was at the downtown, that, you know, where sometimes they have fights. I think they did something there.
Okay. Yeah, it's called the Downtown Las Vegas Event Center, or something like that. It's right. It's right by the D, owned by Derek Stevens, who also owns the brand new hotel called Circa with the outdoor pool and sports book. So that might not be bad. All right. What I did want to say, though, what I got out of that goes is I knew we were going to have an event. I knew we were going to have a fan experience. And I knew we were going to have weigh-ins. But the Hall of Fame ceremony is really, really cool, folks. That one takes place on 3rd. It's actually Joe's birthday. Make that. I'm telling you. That's my favorite event of International Fight Week, except from the fight card itself. They really do a good job with it. And every year it gets better. And there's some pretty good ones. Mark Radner this year. George St. Pierre, I believe, is going in. And I'm not sure what fight they decided on. But Kevin Randleman, I believe, is supposed to go in as well, right? He was supposed to go in last year, but we canceled it. So anyway, those are some really – I think he's the pioneer wing. GSP is the modern era. And then there's contributors and fights and things like that. So those are the ones that I remember off the top of my head, Mark Radner. So you definitely want to go there for that. It's just done very, very well. And hopefully they have it over there at the Park MGM. They have a theater there, what it's called, but it's nice and cozy and air conditioned. So if you are going to come that week, at least come in time for Thursday night for you to be free to go to this. Weigh-ins are the next day, and then the fights are on Saturday, and then the 2-day experience will be Friday and Saturday. So, but don't come in on a Friday and miss out on Thursday. I think it's really, really cool. Now, that said, fighters only usually had their World MMA Awards kind of piggyback certain shows. And I've been seeing certain emails coming out of them about the next one. So I don't know. They had this period of 18 months. And so I don't know how they plan on going forward or what they're going to do or if it's going to be in relation to this event here. But keep an eye on that. I guess that might happen on a Wednesday. I don't think they'd want to go head-to-head against the UFC Hall of Fame. But if you're wondering why last week wasn't International Fight Week, it's because it'll be September 21st through the 25th. Bellator 262 took place on Friday. Juliana Velasquez defended her Bellator flyweight title, 125 pounds, versus Kjellholz. Denise Kjellholz is her name. And she beat her by split decision. It was closer than I thought it was going to be. I thought Velasquez would have an easier time with it. But she won by split decision. So that's her first title defense since beating Elimelech McFarland, who I think got up to 5 title defenses, if I'm not mistaken. So good on her. She stays at 12-0. Kjellholz falls to 6-3. And in the co-main event, Tyrell Fortune defeated Matt Mitrione. A little bit of controversy there, especially from the Mitrione side of headbutt, which can be argued either way. Some were saying Mitrione leaned into him. But the ref, Mergliata, allowed the fight to continue. And so the submission to strikes soon after Fortune got the fight to the ground. Fortune now goes to 11-1. Mitrione goes to 13-9. Any thoughts here goes on those two big fights over at Bellator 262?
I mean, it's unfortunate that Matt Mitrione just has all these controversies. You know, it's not something that he's setting out to do on purpose. It's just kind of happened. Every once in a while, you'll get a fighter that's a little snake bitten by that. But, you know, that this is not a good streak he's on now. And I don't know what Bellator is going to do here. But he's still a guy that's, like, fun to tune in and watch. He's a guy that I enjoy speaking to, hearing from. He just has to figure things out and short things up here. Now, that being said, Tyrell Fortune is a really good fighter, you know, and he's only getting better. So it might just be one of those situations, if you could see my hands, where one guy just goes like this, you know, and starts to really make something out of it. But yeah, that and then the title fight, you're right, was a lot closer than I anticipated it being.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mitrione may have to kiss the Fedor matchup goodbye. Yeah. I think that's 4 in a row for him. I don't know. We'll see what Scott Coker plans on doing. The Fedor's last fight is in October. But I had pitched Mitrione as a possibility because, A, he had beaten Fedor, and who doesn't want to run it back against somebody they lost to? B, Mitrione's American. I think he can always find something out of USA versus Russia. Not to say that that would have been some major point, but C, Mitrione is just likable, and he can talk up a good game, especially when it comes to, you know, I'm going to sling these dogs and knock them out and, you know, whatever. But at the same time, not push it so far that in any way it becomes a hostile situation, which Mitrione doesn't want, Fedor doesn't want, Bellator doesn't want. But this might have cost him. I don't know. We'll see. And as far as Fortune, I thought he was smart to call up Timothy Johnson, because if not for Johnson, he'd be undefeated. And he also knows that Moldowski has Bader up next. So it kind of wouldn't make sense to really call out Bader or Moldowski. I don't think you want to fight Moldowski while he defends his interim title. And I don't think you're going to get in front of Moldowski to face Bader when Bader is done with the Grand Prix, which I'm not implying he's going to lose anytime soon. You know, we still got some matchups left in that Grand Prix. But yet again, that's what champs can do to divisions. I mean, just absolutely throttle them at times. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying once somebody wins the two titles, you give them 30 days to enjoy it, to go to Disneyland, to go have a parade, have a street named after them, have pictures taken with both belts, and then when the 30 days is up, you got to give one up. It's the accomplishment. It's not so much the title defense. It's pretty cool that Amanda's defended both. It's pretty cool that Cormier's defended both, you know, but that's so rare, honestly, for that to happen. And it doesn't really add too much. It's the fact that they got there. It's an exclusive club, these champs. There's not many of them. Cejudo, now that I think about it, Cejudo defended both too. He beat Marias. He beat Johnson and defended against TJ for the flyweight. And then he beat Marias and defended against Cruz. So, yeah, he's got 1-12 in each division. Anyway, GSP has no defenses at middleweight, but he was a champ. But he had 10, I think, as a 10 or 11 as a welterweight. Connor never defended his. Anyway, all right, folks. That's our show for today. We'll kind of talk a little bit more about Bellator 262. There's not too much. I wasn't too impressed with the card once we got past the co-main and the main. But, you know, that and all the other news that's out there, you know, that's accumulated. But we ran out of time here for today, and we definitely had fun talking about that UFC lightweight division. We must have spent 20-30 minutes on it, but it's popping, man. And a lot of it had to do with McGregor. You still got to tip your hat to him and how much weight he carries in the promotion, but especially in the division. But anyway, for now, we're out. Thank you so much for your time. And remember, this is the Monday to Thursday show that you can catch live, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, here on MMA Junkie. And don't forget to look out for our watch-alongs, pretty much the UFC pay-per-view. We're here to watch the fights along with you during the pay-per-views. So mark those on your calendar. A lot of people have told us it's a great time to hang out with the junkies on a Saturday night. And lastly, follow us on social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the Goes. All right, folks. We'll see you all on Thursday. Go out there and be a champion.